Hello and welcome to another edition of Off Camera. I'm your host, Sam Jones. And in this episode of Off Camera, my guest is you. That's right. This is the first ever off-camera call-in podcast in the spirit of old-timey radio. And it stars you guys. That's right. In lieu of a guest this week, I thought I'd have several guests and have them all be listeners, viewers, and fans of Off Camera. So I put the word out on the streets, or on the social media streets, and asked people to either write in an email to me with their question or to call a special 1-800 number, and I would talk to them on the air. And, you know, at the beginning, I wasn't sure if we were going to have much of a response, but we do get enough emails from people around here that I thought it was an interesting experiment. And I think the story of how we started the show is interesting, and I was curious to see if I could open a dialogue up and answer some questions and just get into some conversations of my own with people that know the show. So welcome to our first ever old-time radio call-in podcast show, off-camera style. So pull up a chair and listen in. So let me set the scene for you. We are sitting in the middle of the off-camera studios, and we've made a smaller radio studio. I've got a comfortable chair, I got a couple phones, I got some water, I got some snacks, I got some almonds and chips. And so we're going to take some phone calls, and we're going to read some emails, and hopefully give everyone a little peek behind the curtain to Off Camera, and share a little bit about our process and the way we started the show. So I'm going to start things off with our first email. So here's a question from Heather in Los Angeles. She asks, what podcasts do you listen to and get inspiration from? Were there any that you based your podcast on from the beginning? Well, Heather, I grew up loving radio, and there was a guy on when I was really little named Ira Fistel, and he would talk about anything with anybody. He loved trains. He loved history. He loved World War II. He loved baseball. He loved food. He loved government policy. I mean, this guy could talk about anything with knowledge. And it was in the age before the internet. So you really felt like you were just in the company of a man who could just sink into a conversation. And I always learned something from him. And I grew up with this great appreciation of late night radio. And after I went to bed, I would turn on my little clock radio by my pillow and I would listen until I fell asleep every night. And I think that was my original love for the filmed or recorded conversation. And, you know, I listen to a lot of people now currently. I listen to Terry Gross, and I think she is a fantastic interviewer. If you haven't heard her show, Fresh Air, you should definitely check that out. She's the gold standard of being a respectful and yet personal interviewer. I think Howard Stern is a great interviewer. I think Mark Maron's doing a great job. I think Charlie Rose is great. I think David Letterman is one of the greatest interviews, and I'll miss his show so much because my entire college life and beyond was informed by David Letterman's sardonic wit and his self-deprecating humor. So I feel like in some ways very lucky that I grew up in that golden age of pre-internet broadcast radio and pre-internet television where it was all about what was happening right then, and if you didn't catch it, you missed it. And the hosts were so talented at drawing out their guests and showing their personality. So yeah, there are so many influences and so many things that have influenced Off Camera. I couldn't begin to name the entire recipe that got me here, but I love doing it, and I feel like I have so much to learn. But thank you very much for your question, Heather, and thanks for being a fan of the show. Okay, we're off and running on the first off-camera call-in show, and the phone is lit up, so I'm going to take my first call, and let's just see what happens. Hey, it's Sam. How you doing? Who's this?
My name's Bill.
Hey, Bill.
I've been reading your postings about, you know, how you sort of made your way. And how did you end up going from, you know, doing the photography to doing the show?
It was a natural extension for me because between my work as a photographer and my work directing documentaries and doing music videos and commercials, I think that to me, a portrait of somebody can be a three-dimensional thing. And oftentimes, my best memory of a photo shoot was the things we talked about and the conversations we had. It wasn't just the pictures. So to me, I feel like off camera is a portrait in a lot of ways of somebody. And through conversation, the various facets of that person are revealed. You know, I'd done a film last year where there was a lot of interviews involved, and I realized how much I love just sitting and having a long conversation, and rather than waiting for the phone to ring and having someone say, hey, do you want to photograph so-and-so? This was a chance to direct my path a little bit more and reach out to the people that interest me.
So did you just produce the show yourself and then sell it to DirecTV?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, we started out the show as a total experiment, and the first guest ever was a guy named Val McCallum, who is a friend of mine and a guitar player, a very accomplished and famous guitar player if you follow those kinds of things. He's played with everybody in the world. And I asked him to come and just test out this experiment or this idea I had. And it was no more than that. It was sort of like, let's just try this and see if it works. And it worked. So we did it again. And then I started figuring out the format of what I wanted to do. And we released it online. And we had released about five or six when someone got wind of it at the Audience Network on DirecTV. And thankfully, got excited about it in its original form enough to just want to license it. And so no one asked us to change it to color or to shorten it to 30 minutes or tell us which guests to have on. So they've been incredibly supportive, and we're really lucky that we're on that network because they love the show and they don't mess with the show.
Yeah, it's a pretty eclectic mix. That's why I was wondering, because I really liked it. You know, some of them were sort of a revelation. Like, I recently discovered Dawes on Guitar Center Sessions and fell in love with him. And then you interviewed Taylor, and I was like, it was just amazing to listen to him, because he's a lot like Jackson Browne, which is also one of my favorites. And their music is very introspective and very revealing, and it's great to hear about that process. I just love it. I'm also a musician. I'm an amateur musician, but you know, I just love hearing about how people achieve that, because I find it so hard to do.
Now, you say you play music?
I play guitar. I'm actually 65 now. I'm actually semi-retired. And I started when I was in high school. But I got really discouraged because I just couldn't get past a certain spot. And I put it down for years. But about 5 years ago, I took it up again just to de-stress. And I hooked up with another guy, and we started playing, and a bunch of other guys joined us. And now for the last 5 years, once a week, we get together and just jam. It's like bowling night. We just get some beer, we go in the basement, we just jam for about 4 hours, and it's one of the best things I've ever done in my life, I tell you.
That is the coolest story. Do you guys have a name?
Well, we call ourselves Fight Club.
Fight Club, okay. Well, thank God you found it, and that's such a cool story. Thanks for calling, and for all your kind words. I appreciate it, and take care.
Good luck. Take care. Bye-bye.
You know, that is so cool. As someone who grew up playing in a lot of bands and spending a lot of time in people's garages, I can say, like, that is the best feeling in the world, to get together with your friends and play music. Bill, you're keeping the dream alive, and that's what this whole show is about. So good for you. All right, well, my worst fear is not being realized, which was that nobody would call and we would sit in this room and just eat chips. But it looks like we have, like, three callers holding, so I'm going to jump right back on the phone. And our off-camera switchboard tells me that this is Lisa from New York, and that Lisa works in Midtown Manhattan. Hi, Lisa. How do you listen to the show?
I listen to the podcast usually when I'm going to work or going to class.
And what do you do for a living?
I'm a singing waitress.
You're a singing waitress. Can I pretend to order something from you, and you could show me what you do?
Cool. All right.
Here we go. I'll take the two eggs over medium. With a side of bacon and some sourdough toast.
Great. And all that jazz. I'm going to rouge my knees and roll my stockings down.
Very nice. What do you do after the stockings?
Usually you sing the whole song.
So do singing waitresses get tipped better than regular waitresses?
It depends. We get a lot of tourists, and a lot of them don't know how to tip.
Where do the worst tips come from?
I hate to say it, but our friends across the pond in England.
Really?
Yeah, because I think English people just like think the tipping system is so wrong, so they just don't participate.
And how long have you been a singing waitress?
Just a year. I've lived in New York for 3 years. I worked as a bartender and as a waitress. And then I got this gig, and it was cool to get to kind of do what I came here to do, but also wait tables.
You know what I say? I say that is, it's not exactly what you want to do right now, but you're singing every day, you're working, you're living in New York. That's like 90% of your dream already, right? Now you just have to move over to 42nd Street, and instead of singing in a restaurant, you just have to sing on stage, but you're almost there.
Right. I'm so close. I mean, technically the restaurant's on Broadway.
Well, there you go. So you say you listen to the show as a podcast. What's on your mind?
I just really love going in depth and talking to people about their life and how they got to where they are, because those are the people that are where I want to be. But I just want to know, like, where you see it going.
It's a great question, because I want to see off camera, I want to see it grow in the sense that I keep improving as a host and as whatever it is I do, so that the show is truly unique and different than everything that's out there. And we want to make more, and we want to converse with all kinds of artists and writers and athletes and musicians. And you know, the goal is to really grow this thing as far as it can grow, and find an audience that really appreciates the show for the show, and not just an audience who's tuning in for a particular guest.
Yeah. I like learning about, like, new people that I hadn't heard of before.
So you're doing this. Are you auditioning? How do you grow? What's your next step?
Right now I'm just auditioning for national tours and Broadway shows, trying to find my next gig that way. But I'm also taking a 2-year Meisner on-camera program that I spent a long time trying to get into, and we had our first class yesterday.
Well, good for you.
And it's so overwhelming because everybody's so talented and experienced, and I don't feel like I'm there yet.
I have a secret for you.
Yes.
Everyone in that class feels the same way about the other people. They all feel like everyone else has more experience than them and has some sort of secret weapon that they don't. I think that is the curse of being a creative person. You always think that someone's going to find out that you don't have what it takes, or that you're going to get left behind. And the truth is, most people who stop doing it take themselves out of the game before someone comes along and says, you are no longer allowed to be creative, or you are no longer allowed to audition.
Yeah, just got to keep showing up.
You just got to keep showing up and singing to people who don't tip you.
Yeah, I mean, that has done so much for, you know, going to auditions and being told no. I don't even care anymore.
Well, I think that you should post, you know, some videos somewhere of you doing your work. Just tag them with, you know, don't forget to tip. I'm not happy about this. And I hope, if this call does nothing else for anybody, hopefully someone that lives in England will hear it and go, the next time I have a singing waitress, I'm dropping a $100 bill down.
Oh, God, that'd be great.
Well, Lisa, it was lovely talking to you. Good luck with everything.
Thanks, Sam. Have a good one.
Bye-bye. Well, I hope Lisa from New York City makes it. And I hope that the next time I go to see a big Broadway production, she is there. And then that she brings me a sandwich at intermission. All right, let's do another call. Let's see who is on line 2. Thank you very much for calling. Who am I talking to?
This is Mikey in Anchorage, Alaska.
Hey, Mikey. You know, I have spent time in Anchorage, and I love Alaska. And I am honored that Off Camera makes it all the way up there.
All of my friends that I photograph with are extremely interested in your podcast. We definitely nerd out every time there's a new episode and spend a long time talking about each episode. So,
well, that's really nice to hear. And so you're a photographer? Is that your job?
Correct.
So do you do sort of like grizzly bear catching fish type of pictures, or what? Like what kind of work do you do? Where will we see your work?
Oh, I wish. A lot of my work is with smaller brands and local companies up here. One of my favorite brands that I'm working with right now is this small company called Uncle Leroy's Coffee, and he converted this 1968 Ford school bus into a mobile coffee house. So not exactly grizzlies jumping out at stuff, but just yesterday I was supposed to be up in Healy, Alaska, taking a plane out to the Denali National Park and landing on some glaciers, but the weather was too bad, so You got to roll with the punches.
You do, or you'll end up dead. I mean, yeah. The most sobering thing about my trips to Alaska was the pilot that I was with would point out all the plane crashes on the ground. You know, you fly around Alaska and you see all these wrecks and remnants of planes. But God, I think that's great. And you know, you're kind of living the dream. So what do you want to know about the show?
So my question for you was, when you started the podcast, what was your measurement for success? And then how has that shifted to each episode that you put out now? What do you consider a successful episode?
That's a really good question, and it's really hard to answer, because when I started the thing, it was sort of an experiment. It started with a conversation a friend of mine and I were having, because I've always been a big fan of radio. And he said, you should do a podcast. And I thought about it for a little bit, and I said, well, if I was going to do a podcast, I'd probably photograph these people anyway. You know. And then once I thought about that, I said, well, if we're going to sit down and talk, why not film it? So initially, the measure of success was just actually making it all work. And with every successive couple of months, you know, seeing more people finding the podcast or DirecTV ordering more shows, those are all little milestones of success. But I want to see a growth in myself. I want to get better at doing this, and I want to get better at listening and drawing out a good conversation. And if I didn't feel that way, it probably wouldn't be worth doing it for me. So that's the big measure for me right now, is am I improving based on my own standards? And yeah. I'm really glad to hear we have a voice in Alaska. So, you know, if you want to start some social media marketing for Off Camera up there pro bono, we are interested.
All right.
Well, listen, thanks for calling, and I appreciate you listening, and have fun up there in Alaska this winter.
All right, Sam. Have a great day.
Bye-bye. Okay, we're chugging along on the Off Camera live call-in podcast. This experiment is working. I'm going to take another call here. Hey, it's Sam. Who am I talking to?
Hi, Sam. This is Angela. I'm a prop master on Grey's Anatomy.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good. Let's explain for the audience that's listening what a prop master is.
A prop master is in charge of anything an actor touches on the set of a television show or a music video or a feature film.
So I would imagine that being the prop master on Grey's Anatomy would be a pretty difficult job, because you would have to have a pretty good knowledge of something a doctor would actually pick up, right?
There's medical professionals that assist us with the details, because I am a person who did not take a single science class, but ironically, anatomy in college. But there is a lot of research, and yeah, you sort of really have to know the science and the research in its grandest form.
Well, I have a good friend, actually my best friend growing up, who is a prop master, and I know how hard that job is. And I think it would take actually being on set with you for a week for anyone who's not in that world to know how hard that job is, because you sort of ride the line between creativity and continuity.
Yeah, I mean, if you do the job well, nobody notices it, which is the ideal.
Right, the idea is everyone takes you for granted.
If you're lucky, they don't, but you know, you kind of want to be ninja. You sort of want to get in, make it look good, make it work, get the job done, and get out. So, you know, I think prop people are unsung heroes, but that is the objective, is to have it just, you know, be a seamless part of the story.
It's kind of like someone who doesn't know this business would never think that, like, oh, there's a telephone on the set. Someone had to actually pick out what kind of telephone that is and
right.
Make it light up when you pick up the receiver and all that stuff. I think, you know, it's really interesting.
Film and TV are such immersive experiences, and you know, people just don't realize, like you're saying, that these worlds are complete constructs all the way down to the watches and the rings and the cigarettes and the newspapers, and you know, it's a fully constructed environment, and yeah, it's pretty intense, but it takes a village, and there's a village here, so that's a beautiful thing.
Right. And what do you want to know about the show?
Well, I had a couple questions. The first one is, as far as interviewing goes, you really create a rapport with people, and obviously you do your research, but I don't think a lot of people, also like props, don't realize that interviewing is a skill set, and a difficult one, because I've done it. It's hard. And I just wonder how you came to that skill set. Did you go to journalism school, or?
It's funny, I did go to journalism school, but for photography, I was a photojournalist that I ended up at a college that had a daily paper, and my last year I both wrote for the paper and shot pictures. So I actually interviewed a bunch of musicians, Paul Westerberg from The Replacements and Eggzine from X. And so I was actually doing interviews when I was really young. And then I think the skill set, you're right, I think there's a different skill set when you're doing a documentary than when I'm doing this show. And the main difference is I'm not on camera when I'm doing the documentary. So I can look at my notes and be bumbling and take a long time to get to my point and all that. And then I can ask them to say it over, and I can interrupt them and say, you know, put my question into your answer. And it's a very different thing. You're like, you're trying to get pieces out of somebody. But I think the biggest skill that I'm trying to develop, and that is a constant challenge for me, is to be able to listen completely in the moment, but also have an idea where I'm going next and do it all while you're on camera. And that's been a skill that has been a challenge, but it's a great question.
Yeah.
I appreciate you asking it.
Yeah, the interviews seem really seamless. That's why. Or they seem like really cohesive, I guess. And it seems like you have a list of questions, but they digress. But you manage to bring them around, and that seems hard to me. But the other question I had, and I don't know, this may seem redundant, but, you know, I hear common threads in people's ascensions or career paths or accomplishments. And I wonder if now that you've done all these interviews, and I've probably done more, I guess, since you're getting ready for the next season, if you're finding a common theme.
There are things that come up regularly enough that I certainly take note of them as, oh, this is something you do if you want to get from A to B, because it comes up enough, you know. And one of those themes is this idea that time is short, and it seems like a lot of the people that I talk to seem to have that sense of urgency at a pretty young age. You know, you look at Matt Damon and his story of just knowing so well what he wanted to do. And
business lunches at 13,
Exactly. And there's this laser-like focus from these people that is really astounding. And it seems to fuel their ability to focus and have discipline and do the work. And that's a theme that comes up a lot. And I also see, especially in the guests we've had that are a little bit older, I see how they all sort of had a moment to take stock at a certain point in their lives when they had some success and they'd had some life-changing moments, but they figured out how to take their career into their own hands. And the ones that I really admire seem to all be able to do that. They seem to all sort of realize what their greatest strength is and how to keep it going. And that ability to make changes and reevaluate and change course is something that, you know, it takes someone that has that's willing to take risks and believe in themselves. And that's
right,
inspiring.
Let go of what you thought you were to become something new, you know?
Exactly. So I hope that answers your questions well. Thank you for the prop master lesson, and good luck with everything.
Thank you. You as well.
Well, I hope that wasn't too inside baseball for people, but it's so nice to get a call from someone who lives in LA and works in the industry and who also listens to the show, because there's a different perspective in hearing these conversations when you work with actors and directors and artists every day. And it's nice to hear that the show is resonating with that crowd as well. So let's move up the coast from sunny Los Angeles, California, and take an email from Grant in rainy Portland, Oregon. So Grant asks, where did you get your strong curiosity, and what do you think from your past has made you a person that will research and invest so much into your preparation and curious nature? Well, Grant, I appreciate the compliment. I think that I grew up with a strong work ethic because I had a father and a mother with a strong work ethic. My mom raised four kids, and my father was a self-made man who started his own business. And I think in some ways they instilled in me a sense that if you're not trying your hardest, you're not only letting down yourself, but you're letting down anyone you're working with. And I think that message has transferred itself into my work ethic and my desire to be well researched, because when a guest comes on off camera, they are giving me their time, and I feel like I'm doing them a disservice if I'm not completely prepared or if I don't know their work well enough. And so I think for me, it's really important to do enough research to feel like I'm honoring their time commitment and also honoring the listeners and the viewers who have come to sort of expect that kind of research from the show. So thanks for that question, Grant, and thanks for being a listener of Off Camera. All right, we're going to take a short break. I'm going to eat some more chips, and you can listen to a little message from me about our sponsor. Hey, folks. If you're like me, you make a lot of stuff, and you want it to be great. You know, I take pictures, I record music, I make homemade pizzas. And although my dough rolling skills are masterful, my coding and computer skills are not so much. So when I first had to build a website, it sure would have been nice to have Squarespace around. I wanted my site to be great, but the idea of making it myself was not only daunting, but potentially doomed. So Squarespace is a lot like your website delivery guy. They bring everything you need to create a tantalizing, professionally designed website right to your fingertips, regardless of your skill level. No napkins or coding skills required. With Squarespace, you'll have state-of-the-art technology to power your site and ensure security and stability. It's intuitive, easy, and trusted by some of the most respected brands in the world. It starts at just $8 a month, and you get a free domain if you sign up for a year. So look them up at squarespace.com and start your free trial site today with no credit card required. And when you sign up, be sure to use the offer code OFFCAMERA, and you'll get 10% off your first purchase. Squarespace. Build it beautiful. Okay, let's get back to it. So as these calls and emails are coming in, I have to say that I've been so amazed at the reach that the show has. I mean, I think of myself growing up and listening to radio shows, and, you know, you're listening to a radio station in Los Angeles, or you're listening to a radio station in your hometown. Now we're in this age where I can do a podcast and someone in South Korea can listen to it, or someone in Alaska can listen to it. And it's fascinating to me. I mean, the internet's an amazing thing. And I can never have dreamed as a little boy listening to the radio that one day I could get to do this and my voice would be heard by complete strangers halfway around the world. And speaking of that, I'm looking at our phones and our international line is lighting up. So let's take our first ever international caller on our first ever off-camera call-in podcast. Hi, thanks for calling the show. Who's this?
Hi, my name's Karina McKelvey.
Hi, Karina. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Paris, France.
From Paris. It sounds like you grew up in the United States and live in Paris now.
Yes, I'm from Texas.
You're from Texas. Okay. And tell me, how do you listen to the show or how do you watch the show?
I listen to the podcast while I iron.
While you iron?
Yes.
So if I sent some of my clothes over there, could we work something out?
I would be honored and privileged.
I'll tell my wife that she doesn't have to do any more ironing. Well, thank you for calling and thank you for listening to the show. What's on your mind?
I know that, and during your interviews, you always talk about how you've watched movies and things to prepare for the interviews.
Right.
And I was just wondering how much time and what kind of things you do that goes into the preparation for the interviews.
The basic principle of the show is to have a conversation about things that I'm genuinely interested in. So that kind of guides my research. You know, I try to look for things that I can make a connection with and work that responds to me in a certain way. But I won't lie to you, the research is, it takes up the most time, and I want these conversations to be as great as they can be. And so, you know, I really try to dig in, time permitting, and I hope it shows. So, you know, I'm glad you're noticing. Are podcasts sort of big over there? Do your friends all listen to podcasts while they iron?
I don't really know if a lot of French people do.
Well, I think we have to add a category on the website all about ironing and podcasting. And maybe we could branch out to like the, you know, the dishwashing crowd.
There's so many opportunities here. Housework and podcast.
That's right. All right, Karina, thank you.
Thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
Of course.
Have a great day.
Bye-bye. Wow. Well, not only do we have a listener in Paris, but She's listening while she's ironing clothes. I'm going to ship some of my wrinkled shirts over there, and maybe I can get a twofer. I can get a listener and some shirts ironed. Well, believe it or not, we have another call coming in on our international line. Let's find out if this caller's doing housework as well. Hi, who's this?
So I'm Deborah, and I'm calling from Florence, Italy.
From Florence, Italy. And what do you do in Florence?
For life, you say, I'm working in a supermarket.
Oh, you're working in a supermarket. And how did you find off camera?
I found it on internet because I was looking for Robert Downey Jr. Interview, and I found your interview. Actually, he is my favorite actors, but I like the way you interview people. Like, you have a special way to interview people, so I like to listen to the other one too.
Well, it makes me very happy that in this new age of the world that we can do a little show in Santa Monica, California, and you can listen to it in a supermarket in Florence, Italy.
I mean,
isn't that amazing?
It is.
So what do you want to know about the show?
The question is, how do you prepare before interview? Like, are you nervous, or is it just easy for you to do that?
Well, I'll tell you, in the case of Robert Downey Jr., I have photographed him and worked with him for a lot of years. So that made it a little easier, but I was still nervous because he is such a wild card, you know, like he's so full of energy, and I didn't know what he was going to do. And if you watch that show, he grabs the slate from our sound person and he just sort of makes it his own show. And but I find that if I'm nervous, it's usually because I'm not prepared enough yet. And so for me, the way to get over any nervousness is to really know what I want to talk about and what interests me about somebody. And then once we start going, there's really no nervousness anymore because I sort of get lost in their story.
Yeah, I hope you can get another opportunity to interview him. And so I will be glad to watch. So, okay.
Well, listen. Tell everyone in Florence to tune into Off Camera. Tell them about it.
And thank you very much. Ciao, ciao.
All right, ciao. Okay, I'm just in full expat mode now. Off Camera is international. Let's do an email from outside of the United States. Okay, this email question comes to us all the way from Hamburg, Germany, and it's from Danny. And Danny, I have to say thank you very much for being an off-camera listener all the way in Germany. I think that's really cool. And I have to say that I think it's really cool that we can make this little show in Santa Monica and have it find people all over the world. That's an unexpected and great development from this off-camera project that I never really considered when I started it. And Danny asks, how beneficial has interviewing your guests been to your own creative process? And I have to say, it's been a revelation to be in the amazing position to be able to sit across from these super successful, incredibly artistic, creative, risk-taking, free-thinking individuals and soak up all of this advice and wisdom and get to do it for a job. I mean, I feel like the luckiest person in the world. I think that I've grown more in the last 2 or 3 years doing this show as a creative person than I grew in the last 10 years sort of muddling my way through on my own. And I think that anyone who has an interest in any artistic career or a passion in anything really, whether it's, you know, cooking or sewing or making films or making music, finding other people that do it well and trying to learn from them is the greatest experience. And so that's a great question. And thanks, Danny. And I'm glad that you're listening in Germany. But here we go. We got a tweet because Off Camera is a very modern show. And we have a tweeted question from a guy named Tim in the UK. So Tim, if you're listening, I'm going to answer your question, but I want to remind you to leave a good tip the next time you are in New York City and you're being served by a singing waitress. So Tim's question is, Is photography a hobby of yours, even though it is already a big part of your day-to-day? Well, Tim, that's a good question. I think what you're asking is, if something is your career, can you still love it? And the answer is yes, but the best way to answer is when I think about photographing my family and taking cameras on trips. And I find myself loving photography even more when I just have a camera with me and I'm walking around in a new place. And I have to sort of stop myself sometimes because I'll see this look on my kids' faces like, Dad, you've already taken like 20 pictures. Can we please move on? But I've been very lucky. I do naturally enjoy the process of photography. But I find when I'm on my own in my private life, I feel closer to that spirit of what photography is. And I'm moving at my own pace and I'm looking for images that interest me visually and that say something and that tell a story. So yeah, I would say that photography is a serious hobby for me and also one of my careers. So thank you for the question, and thanks for being a fan of Off Camera. Okay, we're going to take a short pause here and do a little commercial break, and then we'll be right back to calls and emails from you. Hey folks, you know, with a couple of businesses, a few kids, and miscellaneous pets to keep track of, any time I get to spend sleeping is a rare gift. And if you're like me, making those horizontal moments quality moments is a top priority. That's where our sponsor, Casper Mattresses, comes in. They offer meticulously engineered, American-made mattresses that bring together latex foam and memory foam for just the right sink and bounce. Now, I'm not sure if sink and bounce are official technical terms, but they certainly sound like everything you'd want in a mattress. And on the off chance it's not, they've got the most amazing risk-free trial and return policy. They'll deliver the mattress straight to you to try for 100 days. That's right, 100 days. And if you're not happy, they'll come right back and pick it up. Their high-quality twins are $500, and the king-size mattresses are $950. You could lay awake comparing that to industry averages, but if you're laying on a Casper, you'll probably be asleep before you figure out that those are pretty outstanding prices. And to make it even better, you can get $50 towards any mattress purchase by going to casper.com/offcamera and using the code offcamera. In fact, here's what I suggest. Get yourself a Casper mattress, make it a king, you deserve it, grab your phone, plug in your headphones, put Off Camera on, and enjoy a sweet hour of relaxing on your new Casper mattress. Okay, the calls are still coming in on our first ever off-camera live call-in podcast. So we're going to go back to the United States now. Let's see. Let's try line 3. Hey, thanks for calling Off Camera. Who am I talking to?
This is Jonathan.
Hey, Jonathan, where are you calling from?
North Carolina.
North Carolina. I was just in North Carolina 2 weeks ago.
Really?
Taking a little road trip with my daughter. It's beautiful there.
Oh, I love it here.
And what's on your mind?
I actually became familiar with your work when I saw the documentary, I'm Trying to Break Your Heart, that you did with Wilco. So I just came across your podcast based on some of the work I've seen, and I just really like it. I like how you seem to have this rapport with the guests that's very comfortable, and I don't know, I feel like it's a personal conversation that's interesting to me.
It's funny you mentioned the Wilco movie, because that was the first time that the camera was sort of turned around, because that film got a bit of press, and so I had to go do some interviews, and I was photographed for it, and I learned so much about being a photographer from being on the other side of the camera. And I learned that it can be an uncomfortable thing, and you have to be comfortable with yourself to make the person you're photographing comfortable. And that was a big lesson for me, and I think that I've tried to transfer that knowledge to the off-camera thing as well.
That's interesting. Another thing about the podcast I really like is I feel like sometimes you can weave in your own personal life with something that relates to the artist or whatever. And I have kids of my own, and I always find that it really just informs your work in so many ways, just because you have to think about life differently. And it seems like when you bring this up that the person you're talking to always just kind of relates to that in some way.
You know, it's funny, before, and I'm sure this is the same with you, but before you have kids, I would just tune out when other people talked about their kids. you know, because I just couldn't relate. And it's that thing. How do you relate to an experience? I mean, even if you meet someone that, you know, loves dogs and you don't have a dog, and you're not going to really be able to have that conversation. And I noticed after I had kids that they are on my mind more than anything else throughout the day. So I think as a parent, you're always trying to work things out, or you're realizing how much you're learning about yourself as a parent through either the mistakes you're making with your kids or the questions they're asking. And so I immediately jump in anytime I pick up on something like that from a guest in the chair, because I just selfishly want to have that conversation and I want to learn. And I always figure that's the point in the conversation that someone who's 22 years old and listening might tune out. But, you know, I think that being a parent is, it's one of those things that it makes you realize how vulnerable and how uncontrollable life is. And so I'm always trying to relate with people. And I, again, I think that's just goes back to the idea that, you know, these people may be famous and they may be in that bubble of fame and celebrity, but they're still dealing with the same things with their kids, and they still have the same desires that we do about wanting their kids to grow up and be good people and not get in trouble and all those things. So I think that if you're not relating your own personal experience and what's going on with you on a day-to-day basis, you're not really having a present conversation, you know? So that stuff slips in, and sometimes we watch it later and I wonder, is it too personal or is it too, you know, off the subject of what off camera is supposed to be? And in the end, it's real. So we mostly leave it in.
Yeah.
Well, Jonathan, thank you so much for calling and for listening to the show.
Thank you for taking the time, and just nice of you to kind of, you know, allow yourself to be available to just chat. So thanks so much.
All right. Enjoy North Carolina.
All righty.
All right. Let's do another call. We've got two or three calls holding, so we better get to it. Hey, it's Sam. Who am I talking to?
Hi, Sam. This is Julie. How are you today?
Good. Hi, Julie. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Well, that is interesting. It's our second call from North Carolina in a row.
Well, good peeps from there.
Something's going on over there. I think we need to check our web stats and find out what's going on. Well, what do you do in North Carolina?
I do marketing for a technology company.
You do? So before I get to wherever it is you called, I'm fascinated with marketing right now because I feel like all the rules are changing, and in a way, publicity, PR, and marketing has all turned so social that the job is almost requires a different set of skills than it did even 2 or 3 years ago. Would you say that's true?
Very much so. Yeah, it is very different. It's become much more data-centric. It's become much more analytical.
Well, I find that you can't lie anymore, right? Marketing used to be built on the sizzle, not the steak, and now it's the steak because people can just go look up your stats.
You can't lie, and you can't, what I call, write marketing fluff. You can't just say, oh, we're going to bring value to your business and put some great-looking, like I said, I work in the technology, so you can't put a picture of all these blinking lights. You need to say, you know what, this is going to process X amount of your information, and this is what you're going to get out of it, and it's going to make your people smarter, faster, and give them the data behind it.
Right. Well, maybe you could help us. We need to learn how to market off camera better so that people outside of North Carolina listen to it.
Okay, can I just tell, I'm not kidding you when I say this. One of the reasons I was telling your telephone gal, who is just lovely.
That would be the lovely Katie.
I told her I've been binging on your podcast because I just found out about it this week. So I've been just listening, and I thought, man, one of the things I want to find out is, how do they market this show?
I think we struggle like every other startup media entity in trying to find people that really get the show, you know, because we definitely have our share of people who tune in for a specific guest. But for us, we really want to find people that sort of fall in love with the format and the idea behind the show, and they don't care who's on, because once that happens, I can expand our guest list even more, I think, to people that, you know, nobody's heard of, but that I know could make a great conversation.
Well, I'll think about it from a marketing standpoint, because I kid you not, when I was listening to the Ed Helms show yesterday, And that's what I started thinking about. I thought, and I also was thinking, I got to tell my parents about this. I have to start telling people about this show.
Yes, tell us how to reach people in Tennessee and Georgia and everywhere. Give us your thoughts. And please keep listening. Tell your friends. Go out and paint off camera on a wall somewhere, but don't get caught. That kind of thing.
I will certainly be in touch. I'll put my marketing cap on.
Thank you.
Take care.
I love this. I'm talking to marketing people in North Carolina who love the show. I mean, maybe I underestimated the potential of the off-camera live call-in podcast. Maybe we can staff up a little bit on our PR side. Thank you very much for that call. Let's do an email because I've got a pile of emails here and I want to get to as many as I can. This one comes from Chad in Indiana. Chad says, I love the minimal set and the black and white aesthetic look of off-camera. What was the inspiration behind filming in black and white and the set design? And are there any challenges to filming that way that might not be apparent to the audience? Chad, that's a great question. And we've done the show in black and white from the beginning, probably because as a photographer, I just love black and white so much. And I feel like there's a simplicity to it that really lets you get to the emotion of a person. And whether that's a photograph or a moving image, sometimes by taking away so much information in the image, you're really left with just the basics and you can really sort of see into somebody. And when we first started doing tests for the show, we found out how much we loved a story being told when it was the close-up camera in black and white. And it just felt like you were really seeing inside this person's brain and you weren't so distracted by the set or by the color or, you know, their skin tone. It really brought the visuals down to basics, and it lets you focus on what the person is saying and not about the artifice of the clothes or the style. And in terms of does that present any problems? You know, shooting on white is never easy, and finding a balance of tones. And we do work very hard to get the contrast right. And when we send it off to the broadcast center, and eventually to DirecTV, it's been a learning curve to try to preserve all those tones that are in the original image. But in terms of an aesthetic and connecting off camera to a classic portrait type of situation, plus a classic journalistic long form interview, I think black and white just is the right aesthetic for our show. So thank you for that question, and thanks for enjoying off camera. Okay, let's go back to the phones. Let's see. Line 7 is lighting up. I'm just kidding. We don't have a line 7. But there is someone on the line, so let's see who it is. Hello, you're on the show. Who am I talking to?
Hey, what's up, Sam? It's Tommy. How are you, man?
Hey, Tommy. Good. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Yonkers, New York.
Oh, my gosh.
Right outside Manhattan, yeah.
You know what they say about Yonkers?
Well, they say a lot of things, but I like to hear what you say, though.
They say you can take the girl out of Yonkers, but you can't take the gum out of her mouth.
That's actually pretty kind, considering the other things they say about Yonkers. But we'll go with that one.
So, what do you do over there in Yonkers?
Well, right now I'm actually a homeschool dad.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah, well, I took a lot of heat from it. It was like announcing to the family that we were joining a satanic cult. But we just started this year, and it's awesome. It's exciting, and we've had, you know, my son and I have been having a great time, and you know, he actually likes getting up in the morning and getting to work. So it's nice.
What's your question about the show, Tommy?
So my question to you is, if you could have somebody that has passed that you would have loved to have on off camera, you know, who would you have loved to have on, and what would be at least one of the questions that you would want to get from them, or, you know, a lesson that you would get from them?
Oh my gosh. Now I feel I'm on the spot, but that's a great question. I mean, the first person that pops into my mind is Joe Strummer, who was in The Clash.
Oh, wow. Very cool. Yep.
And he passed away, and I got the good fortune to photograph him for Vanity Fair magazine about 3 years before he died. And for me, growing up and discovering music and discovering my own generation's music, which dovetailed nicely with punk rock because of the age I was when that stuff started exploding, and also because there was a local scene in my town that produced some pretty great punk rock bands like Social Distortion and Agent Orange and The Adolescents. And all these guys, you know, they went to my high school and neighboring high schools. And And through that local scene, I discovered where it started with not only the Ramones, but with the Sex Pistols and the Clash. And there was a political and social form of justice that Joe Strummer sang about that made sense to me, but there was also every bit of young adolescent coming of age type of subject matter as well. And I just love the music. I love the combination of melody and energy and education. And I think that sitting down with Joe Strummer would have just been a great chance. You know, I can't even really think of a specific question I would ask him, but I would really want to know what really got under his skin, the way that the Clash got under my skin, and when he decided to do something about it and how he knew what to do and, you know, those kinds of things. Because I guess in life, we're always trying to find people that we can connect with and find a similar experience, you know, and share that. And that helps us feel, I guess, like we're not alone in the world. And so with him, I think that I would really want to know, you know, about that period in his life when something got under his skin and motivated him to do something.
It seems to me as most people in conventional society look at guys like Strummer that, you know, they're out of their minds and they're unintelligent and they don't necessarily, you know, they're rebellious, wild guys, but these guys are so beyond, you know, what conventional society is all about. It's, and that brilliance and mystery to it is so cool. So that's cool you picked Strummer. I had no idea you were going to guess, but I wouldn't have thought Strummer just off the top of my head. That's awesome though.
And really with Joe, I think the reason I said Joe is because I think I got the sense from him that there was a much wider, you know, spectrum of choices for me to choose from in life than what I was seeing in my hometown. You know, the great thing about art, especially at your developing ages, is it just exposes you to the world. You know, for as open-minded as your parents may or may not be, or your school or your friends, art has this ability to not only educate you about there being a larger world, but to give you a feeling and to give you that inspiration that there are these vibrant minds out there in the world.
Absolutely. It almost feels like art history should be a regular part of the school system, because art is what creates, it's a reflection of the history that's going on at the moment in time. I'm not an artsy-fartsy guy, but I truly believe that, you know, when you look at a piece of art, you look at what's happening wherever it is, you know, 17th century art or 18th century art, it's a complete reflection of what was happening during that time. And along with the music and of course as goes along, you know, film. And so it's amazing that you just said that. So thank you.
Of course. And you know what, you make a great point. Now I have much more faith in your homeschooling abilities. So,
thank you.
maybe you ought to take it beyond your own home and start your own school.
Hey, you know what? You know, it's who knows? You know, one step at a time, right?
Well, Tommy, you're a wise man, and it kind of proves my point that you sit anyone down in a chair and you get them talking about what they love, and it's a fascinating conversation. So, thank you very much for calling. And
no, man, thank you for
tuning in to the show. All right, Tommy, thanks for calling. I'll talk to you later.
You're the man, brother. Take care.
Bye-bye. It's true. One of the great lessons that I have learned in doing off-camera is that just by developing my listening skills and my curiosity, I have much more rewarding conversations in my daily life. And I do think I can sit down with anybody and get completely absorbed in their life story. It's amazing to find so many parallels between these artists that we highlight on the show and the listeners and people that you run into on the street. And I must say, I have a newfound respect for anyone who works in live radio, because as fun as this is, there's also a lot of pressure to just pick up the phone and talk to someone about anything and try to be sort of intelligent or sort of entertaining. But I am enjoying myself, and I hope you guys are enjoying listening in on these conversations and finding out a little bit more about the behind-the-scenes stuff here at Off Camera. Okay, I want to get to at least one more call, so let's see who is on line two. Hey, it's Sam. Who am I talking to?
Hi, Sam. This is Brian Jennings.
Hi, Brian. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from your town of Fullerton, California.
From Fullerton, my hometown?
That's correct.
Well, tell me, without you know, giving away your exact location. What neighborhood are you in?
Sort of the Sunny Hills area.
Okay, okay. I know it well.
Anyway, Sam, I just wanted to call and say your show is so refreshing. It's literally the only show that I won't miss.
Oh, gosh, that means the world to me.
My real question for you today was, what is your process in actually picking your guests?
Well, okay, that's a good question. It started out as people that I've known and photographed, and after about the first season, it became more about expanding our guest list a little bit to people I didn't know, and which was scary because it's easy to sit down with someone you know. And what we realized was that the best shows come from a genuine interest that I have in the person's work. And if I'm curious about who they are or how they got where they were, or even more so, if I have the thought that I just don't know how they do what they do, those triggers for me pique my interest in somebody. And then it becomes a conversation around here in the office of, you know, how do we get to these people and how do we excite them about the show and how do we find good timing so that they have another reason to come on other than just to do me a favor. I think that the people that are really fun to have on are people that do several things, and not just as hobbies, but they dive deep into multiple careers.
Yeah.
Like Kevin Bacon. Kevin Bacon takes his band as seriously or more seriously as he takes his acting jobs, and it's not a vanity project for him, and it's something that he has a deep knowledge of. And I think that those people are so interesting because they're willing to put themselves in positions of where they can fail or where they can come up short. And I think most of these people that we're talking about, they find that they're more happy making the thing than they are with the accolades or with the money or with the fame.
Right,
they really
right.
enjoy the process. And, you know, and that to me is the most fun conversation, is to talk to somebody who not only loves the process of making whatever art that they're making, but that has developed a deep level of craft and they really have become a more well-rounded or deep person through that study and through that discipline, you know?
Well, I love Ethan Hawke's comment, like, who cares if it's any good? It was a real blast doing it.
You know, that was a big comment for me, too. And I'm glad you said that, because that is something that is so freeing. If you're an artist and you're trying to make something, you know, it's a very vain thing to do, to say, oh, I'm going to go off for a year and write a novel, or I'm going to go in a studio and make a record. And a lot of people, I think, feel the pressure of, if this isn't accepted by the public or if it isn't considered quote-unquote good, then I've wasted my time. And what Ethan shone a light on was that, hey, this is what I love doing, and it doesn't matter what anyone else thinks of it as long as I went through the process loving what I was doing and loving the act of it rather than the finish line.
I get it. I mean, being brave enough to be vulnerable and to fail, but at the same time saying, this is who I am. And that's very inspiring for people like myself and all, I'm sure all your viewers, you know, who are also artists, that, you know, it is about having the courage to be self-expressive and not to be afraid and to push through those barriers. And, you know, as I say, I watch your show, I read about your show, I play the podcasts all the time. I think I'm your biggest fan.
Well, Brian, I appreciate that very much, and that's really nice to hear. And if you run into my folks in Fullerton, tell them I have a show.
And, I will do that.
But thank you, and yeah, keep doing what you're doing, because if it makes you happy, that's all you need, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Well, I think that's a perfect way to end our first call-in radio show, with a call from my hometown of Fullerton, California. And I don't know that guy, by the way, but I think we're going to send him a cheese basket or something, because he sounds like a dear, dear individual, and I'm sure he likes cheese. So we didn't get to every call, and I didn't get to read every email, but I really appreciate everyone taking the time to call in and write letters, and I always love hearing from anyone who likes the show. So please, you guys, if you have anything you want to say, criticisms, comments, anything, send me an email, sam@offcamera.com, And if you like this call-in show and you want to hear more of them, let me know that too. In the spirit of behind-the-scenes, off-camera information, I also want to thank everyone who is involved in this podcast. I'll start with the man sitting next to me, Nathan Shields, who's our sound man and so much more. We think he lives here. We're not sure, but we think he lives in the studio because he works so hard and so long. So thank you, Nate. Thanks also to Katie Rozef in the front of our office, managing everything that goes on in the studio. Renee Chartier, who handles all our graphics work. Amy Jones, our managing editor, who also does PR work and is an incredible writer, and I don't know what we'd do without her wisdom and wit. And Crawford Shippey, who is not only our producer, but my business partner and off camera, and we could not do the show without him. I also want to mention Tyler Rumpf, who edits and shoots a lot of the off-camera stuff and does amazing things with a camera. And the other incredible people that help us out, Kristen Heitkotter, Albert Fu, Matt Davidson, Kara Johnson, Carol LaFluffy, Todd Dana, Brian Bennett, Chetan Chabuk, and everyone else who's been in and out of this studio and involved in this project. I couldn't do it without all of you, and mostly I couldn't do it without an audience. So thank you for being such loyal listeners. And please tell your friends about the show, spread the word, and we can keep doing this crazy thing. And if you haven't visited the website yet, please take a minute to go to offcamera.com. We have limited edition printed magazines. We have t-shirts. We have subscriptions so you can get the physical off-camera magazine delivered to your door. And we have an app. So you can not only read the magazine on your phone or on your iPad, but you can also watch the entire show within that app. It's a pretty cool site. Take a minute and poke around if you haven't seen it yet. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Sam Jones. The show is at Off Camera Show. And make sure to tune in just a few days when we release our first episode of our new season with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Like, my preparation for something like Southpaw was 5 months around boxers all the time, going to every fight that I could. It's all body. Boxers are all body. You know, I started, like, I'd always warm up, you know, in like a hoodie and get sweat going, get warm. By the end, like, the outfits I was wearing like lime green shorts and no shirt with like fluorescent yellow socks, and like I was painting my shoes, like, and I was like, what is that?
I know you're going to love this episode, and you're going to love all the guests we have coming up for you. And we're switching to a weekly format here, so you're going to start seeing off-camera podcasts popping up in your feed a lot more often. So make sure to join us for all the fun this season. Off-camera.